What's up, rockers? This is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio. Last show, we discussed the revolutionary, experimental, and progressive rock. Today, I want to move it over to a more well-known style of rock, which is hard rock. So, hard rock includes a heavy use of aggressive vocals, distorted electric guitars, bass guitar, and drums, and is sometimes accompanied with keyboards. It actually began in the mid-1960s with the garage, psychedelic, and blues rock movements. The electric guitar is often emphasized, used with a distortion of other effects, both as a rhythm instrument using repetitive riffs with a varying degree of complexity, and a solo lead instrument. Drumming characteristically focuses on driving rhythms. The bass guitar works in conjunction with the drums, occasionally playing riffs, but usually providing a backing for the rhythm and lead guitars. Vocals are often growling, raspy, or involve screaming or wailing, sometimes in a high range, or even a falsetto voice. The roots of hard rock can be traced back to the mid to late 1950s, particularly the electric blues. Electric blues guitarists began experimenting with hard rock elements such as driving rhythms, distorted guitar solos, and power chords in the 1950s, evident in the work of people from the Memphis blues guitarists such as Joe Hill Lewis, Willie Johnson, and particularly Pat Hare. And these artists captured a grittier, nastier sound, as well as Dick Dale such as Let's Go Tripping and Miserloo. It was seen there, as we discussed in previous shows. In the 1960s, American, Dutch, and British blues and rock bands began to modify rock and roll by adding harder sounds, heavier guitar riffs, bombastic drumming, and louder vocals from electric blues. And this kind of made it a garage rock standard, and the songs of rhythm and blues influenced British invasion acts. And this included songs like You Really Got Me by The Kinks, My Generation by The Who, Shape of Things by The Yardbirds, Inside Looking Out by The Animals, and I Can't Get No Satisfaction by The Rolling Stones. Eventually, this led to the hard rock genre. So, the first hard rock band I want to discuss is AC/DC. So, AC/DC is an Australian rock band formed in Sydney in 1973 by Scottish-born brothers Malcolm and Angus Young. Although their music has been variously described as hard rock, blues rock, and heavy metal, the band tends to call themselves simply rock and roll. As they started out, Angus Young had adopted his characteristic school uniform stage outfit. This stage outfit became iconic, especially during his live performances, and the idea actually came from his sister, Margaret Angus. And along that, before he actually developed the schoolboy outfit, he actually tried other costumes such as the Spider-Man, Zorro, a gorilla, and a parody of Superman where he named himself Super Ang. So in its early days, most members of the band dressed in some form of glam or satin outfit, which made them really remarkable during their live shows around this time. So Malcolm and Angus Young developed the idea for the band's name after their sister Margaret Young saw the initials AC/DC on a sewing machine. AC/DC is an abbreviation meaning alternating current, direct current, electricity. The brothers felt that this name kind of symbolized the band's raw energy, their power-driven performances of their music. By October of 1974, AC/DC recorded their first studio album, which was called High Voltage. It was released exclusively in Australia on February 17th of 1975, and it only took 10 days to record and was based on instrumental songs written by the Young Brothers, with lyrics added by Scott. AC/DC became one of the most popular and successful acts in Australia at this time. And also at this time, punk rock was breaking in and kind of came to dominate the pages of major British music weeklies. AC/DC was actually sometimes identified with the punk rock movement by the British press, but the band actually hated punk rock, believing it to be a passing fad. Their manager, Michael Browning, actually wrote that it wasn't possible to even hold a conversation with AC/DC about punk without them getting totally pissed off. So, throughout the band's career, their songs have been criticized as simplistic, monotonous, kind of deliberately lowbrow and sexist. David Marchese of Vulture actually wrote that, regardless of the lyricist, whether it was Scott, who was capable of real wit and color, Johnson, or the Young Brothers, there is a deep strain of misogyny in the band's output that veers from feeling terribly dated to straight-up reprehensible. And according to Tris Scow in 1988, the brutal truth is that sexism has never kept the great rock and roller down. From Muddy to Lemmy, lots of dynamite music has objectified women in objectable ways, but Rotley is not among those ways. So the first AC/DC album to gain worldwide distribution was a 1976 compilation of tracks taken from the High Voltage album and TNT LPs. And this was also titled High Voltage. The album has to date sold 3 million copies worldwide, and the band's third studio album, titled Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap, was released in the same year in both Australian and international versions, just like its predecessor. So the major breakthrough in the band's career came in their collaboration with producer Mutt Lange on the band's sixth studio album, titled Highway to Hell. This was released in 1979. And legendary guitarist Eddie Van Halen actually noted this to be his favorite AC/DC record, along with Powerage. And this became the first AC/DC LP to break into the US Top 100, eventually reaching number 17, and propelled AC/DC into the top ranks of hard rock acts. Highway to Hell had lyrics that kind of shifted away from flippant and comical toward more central rock themes, putting increased emphasis on backing vocals, but still features AC/DC's signature sound, which was loud, simple, pounding riffs and grooving backbeats. In 1980, the band began to work on their seventh studio album, titled Back in Black, but as the development was in progress, a few casualties did arise. On February 19th of 1980, Scott purposely passed out in the car on the way back to the apartment of an acquaintance after a night of drinking and drug taking. According to his friend, upon his arrival at home, he was actually unable to move, and Scott from the car into his home for the night. So he actually left them in the car overnight to sleep off the effects of the alcohol, and unable to wake Scott early in the evening on February 20th, Kinnear actually rushed him to the hospital, where Scott was pronounced dead on arrival. It was known as a pulmonary aspiration of vomit, and was actually cited as the cause of Scott's death, and the official cause was listed as an acute alcohol poisoning. So, following Scott's death, the band briefly considered quitting, but was actually encouraged to keep playing by assistance by Scott's parents, that they kind of stated that they would want them to carry on. So they eventually decided to continue and release music even to this day. And this is where I will leave you for a quick break. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio. Welcome back, rockers. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio. So after reviewing AC/DC's success, I want to bring the attention over to an American hard rock band, starting with Guns N' Roses. So Guns N' Roses, is an American hard rock band from Los Angeles, California. They formed in 1985, and the band signed with vocalist Axl Rose, lead guitarist Slash, rhythm guitarist Izzy Stradlin, bassist Duff McKagan and drummer Steve Adler. In their early years, the band's kind of heroism and rebelliousness drew comparisons to the early Rolling Stones and kind of earned them the nickname the most dangerous band in the world. So, the Guns kind of recalled the formation of the band in a 2019 interview and stated that Axl got into an argument with our manager, and our manager filed Axl, but we all lived together, so it was all really weird. So that same night, he got fired, we started Guns N' Roses, and I called Izzy the next day and said, "Hey, we're gonna start this new band called Guns N' Roses, do you want in?" And it was as simple as that. The band coined its name from combining the names of both previous groups. Initially, it was the name of a label they were going to release music on. Rejected names for the band actually included Heads of Amazon and AIDS. Their first show was promoted as LA Guns in Hollywood Rose Presents Guns N' Roses. And this was on March 26th of 1985. So seeking to record their debut album, producer Spencer Proffer was hired to record Night Train and Sweet Child of Mine to test his chemistry with the band. The band eventually recorded 9 songs during these sessions, and this included songs like Heartbreak Hotel, Don't Cry, Welcome to the Jungle, and Shadow of Your Love. In the US, Welcome to the Jungle was issued as the album's first single in October with an accompanying music video. So Guns N' Roses' debut album was titled Appetite for Destruction. It was released on July 21st of 1987, and the album underwent an artwork change after the original cover design by Robert Williams. And it depicted a surrealist scene in which a dagger-toothed monster kind of attacks a robot rapist, and was deemed too controversial. So the band stated the original artwork was a symbolic social statement, with the robot representing the industrial system that's kind of raping and polluting our environment. The revised cover was done by a guy named Andy Engel, based on the design by tattoo artist Bill White Jr., and they designed the artwork for A Tattoo Rose and acquired the previous year. The artwork featured each of the 5 members' skulls layered on a cross. Sweet Child of Mine was the album's second US single, and it was a love song co-written by Rose as a poem for his then-girlfriend, whose name was Erin Everly, and she was actually the daughter of Don Everly of the Everly Brothers. Slash later commented, "I hated that song with a huge passion for the longest time, and it turned out to be our hugest hit, so it goes to show what I know." The song was released in Japan as part of the EP Live of the Jungle, which also featured a selection of live recordings from the band's June 1987 dates at London's The Marquee, the group's first shows outside the US. The song is the highest charting Guns N' Roses song, and is the band's only song to reach number 1 on the Billboard Hot 100. So before the release of the albums, Guns N' Roses embarked on a 28-month-long Use Your Illusion tour. It became famous for both its financial success and the many controversial incidents that occurred during these shows. The tour had 192 dates in 27 countries, with over 7 million people attending the concerts. It is considered the longest tour in rock history. And one incident I'd like to report that happened during this tour was on July 2nd of 1991 in Missouri. So Rose discovered that a fan was filming the show with a camera. After asking the venue security to take away the camera, Rose jumped into the audience and had a heated confrontation with the fan and actually assaulted him. After being pulled from the audience by the members of the crew, Rose said, "Well, thanks to the lame security, I'm going home." He threw his microphone to the crowd and stormed off stage. The angry crowd actually rioted, and they injured dozens of people, and the footage was captured by Robert John, who was documenting the tour, and the police were unable to arrest Rose until almost a year later, as the band went overseas to continue their tour. So Guns N' Roses has also received significant criticism throughout the years. The band received criticism for drug and alcohol use in the 1980s and the early 90s. And the band also was criticized for tardiness and starting shows later than advertised. But despite all this, Guns N' Roses has influenced many modern rock bands such as Fall Out Boy, Nickelback, The Strokes, and Black Label Society. And with that, another rock band from the East Coast that I want to talk about, as you may know them as Kiss. So Kiss is an American rock band formed in New York City in January of 1973 by Paul Stanley, Gene Simmons, Peter Criss, and Ace Frehley. Well known for its members' face paint and stage outfits, their elaborate live performances, which featured fire-breathing, blood-spitting, smoking guitars, shooting rockets, levitating drum kits, and pyrotechnics, and with their makeup and costumes, the band members actually took on a persona of comic book-style characters. The Star Child was Stanley, the Demon was Simmons, the Spaceman or Space Ace was Frehley, and the Catman was Criss. So Stanley came up with the name while he, Simmons, and Criss were driving around New York City. Criss mentioned that he had been in a band called Lips, so Stanley said something to the effect of, "What about Kiss?" Frehley created the new iconic logo, making the SS in Kiss look like lightning bolts. So when he went to write the new band name over Wicked Lester on a poster outside the club where they were going to play, the letters actually happened to look similar to the insignia of the Nazi SS, which was a symbol that is outlawed in Germany by Section 86A of the German Criminal Code. However, Simmons and Stanley both are Jewish and have denied any intentional likeness to Nazi symbolism in the logo. So, since 1979, most of the band's album covers and merchandise in Germany have used a different logo, in which the letters SS actually look like ZZ backwards. This logo is also used in Austria, Switzerland, Poland, Lithuania, Hungary, and Israel to avoid controversy. Along with that, the band's name has repeatedly been the subject of rumors pertaining to alleged hidden meanings. Among these rumors are claims that the name is an acronym for Knights in Satan's Service, Kinder SS, or Kids in Satan's Service, but Simmons has denied all of these claims. Although Kiss albums had not proved to be big sellers, the band was quickly gaining a reputation for its live performances. Kiss concerts featured such spectacles as Simmons spitting blood, which was an effect made primarily from raw egg whites, strawberry syrup, and red food coloring, and breathing fire, which was spitting flammable liquid at a torch. Frehley also soloing as his guitar burst into flames, and this was light and smoke bombs placed inside his guitar, and Criss's elevating drum riser that emitted sparks, and Stanley's Townshend-style guitar smashing and pyrotechnics throughout the show. So Kiss wanted to express the excitement felt at its concerts, which its studio albums kind of failed to do so far. So with their new album titled Alive, which achieved gold status and spawned Kiss's first top 40 single, which was a live version of Rock and Roll All Night, it was the first version of the song with a guitar solo, and this recording has become the best-known version. It is also the basis of most covers, such as the cover by Poison in 1987. In recent years, the band admitted that additional audience noise had been added to the album, as well as overdubs on select guitar and vocal spots, not to deceive fans, but to add more excitement and realism to their record. So, two more highly successful studio albums were released in less than a year, which was Rock and Roll Over and Love Gun. A second live album titled Alive 2 was released in 1977. All three items were certified platinum soon after their release, and between 1976 and 1978, Gallup poll named Kiss the most popular band in America. In Japan, Kiss performed 5 sold-out shows at Tokyo's Budokan Hall, breaking the previous record of 4 held by the Beatles. So sensing it was time for a change, Kiss made the decision to abandon its trademark makeup and costumes. The band officially appeared in public without any makeup for the first time since its very early days on September 18th of 1983, appearance on MTV, which coincided with the release of Lick It Up. The tour to promote the new album and the unmasked band members began in Lisbon, Portugal in 1983, and the band's first concert without makeup since 1973. And so I'll leave you for another break. Right after this break, we're going to discuss 2 more iconic bands known as Aerosmith and the legendary Van Halen. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio. Welcome back, rockers. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio. So after discussing prominent hard rock bands, I want to bring it over to more mainstream hard rock, starting with Aerosmith. So Aerosmith is an American rock band formed in Boston in 1970. The group consists of Steven Tyler, who was on lead vocals, Joe Perry on guitar and vocals, Tom Hamilton on bass, Joey Kramer on drums, and Brad Whitford on guitar. And Aerosmith is the best-selling American hard rock band of all time, having sold more than 150 million records worldwide, including over 70 million records in the US alone. With 25 gold albums, 18 platinum albums, and 12 multi-platinum albums, they hold a record for the most total certifications by an American band and are tied for the most multi-platinum albums by an American band. So, they started when 2 bands mashed together. The members of the band reportedly spent afternoons watching the Three Stooges reruns. One day, they had a post-Stooges meeting to try to come up with a name. Kramer said that when he was in school, he would write the word Aerosmith all over his notebooks. The name had popped into his head after listening to Harry Nilsson's album, Aerial Ballet, which featured a jacket art of a circus performer jumping out of a biplane. Initially, Kramer's bandmates were unimpressed by this idea, and they all thought he was referring to the Sinclair Lewis novel that they required to read in high school English class. And he responded by saying, "No, not Aerosmith, but A-E-R-O, Aerosmith." So Aerosmith signed with Columbia in mid-1972 and released their debut album titled Aerosmith. Released in 1973. The album peaked at number 166 and was straightforward rock and roll with well-defined blues influences, kind of laying the groundwork for Aerosmith's signature blues rock sound. Although the highest charting single from the album was Dream On at number 59, several tracks such as Mama Kin and Walkin' the Dog would become staples of the band's live shows and received airplay on rock radio. The album reached gold status initially, eventually went on to sell 2 million copies, and was certified double platinum after the band reached mainstream success over a decade later. In 1975, Aerosmith released their third album titled Toys in the Attic, which established Aerosmith as an international star. Competing with the likes of Led Zeppelin and the Rolling Stones, they originally derided as Rolling Stones knockoffs in part due to the physical resemblance between lead singer Steven Tyler and Mick Jagger. Toys in the Attic kind of showed that Aerosmith was a unique and talented band in their own right. Toys in the Attic was an immediate success, starting with the single Sweet Emotion, and this song became the band's first top 40 hit. And this was followed by a successful re-release of the song Dream On, which was number 6, becoming their best charting single of the 1970s. The song Walk This Way was also re-released in 1976 and reached the top 10 in early 1977. In 1998, in the midst of setbacks during the Nine Lives tour, the band released a single titled I Don't Wanna Miss a Thing. And this song was a love theme written by Diane Warren for the 1998 film titled Armageddon. And this movie actually starred Steven Tyler's daughter, whose name was Liv Tyler. This song became Aerosmith's first and only number one single when it debuted at the top position on the Billboard Hot 100 and stayed at the top of the charts for 4 weeks. The song was nominated for an Academy Award in 1999, and it helped open Aerosmith up to a new generation and remains a slow dance staple to this day. So 1998 also saw the release of the double live album titled A Little South of Sanity, and this assembled from performances on the Get a Grip and Nine Live tours. The album went platinum shortly after its release, and the band continued with their seemingly never-ending world tours promoting Nine Lives and the I Don't Wanna Miss a Thing single well into 1999. And one last fun fact about the band: on November 1st of 2007, the band entered the studio to work on the final studio album of their current contract with Sony. At the time, it was believed that the album would include both re-recorded tracks left off previous albums as well as brand new material. In an interview, guitarist Joe Perry revealed that in addition to creating a new album, a band was working closely with the makes of the Guitar Hero series to develop Guitar Hero Aerosmith. And this was a video game dedicated to the band's music that you could still play today. So with that, I want to bring the attention over to Van Halen. Van Halen is an American rock band formed in Pasadena, California in 1972. It's credited with restoring hard rock to the forefront of the music scene. Van Halen is known for its energetic live shows and for the work of its acclaimed lead guitarist, Eddie Van Halen. The band was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2007, and from 1974 until 1985, Van Halen consisted of Eddie Van Halen, Eddie's brother drummer Alex Van Halen, vocalist David Lee Roth, and bassist Michael Anthony. As of 2007, Van Halen was one of only 5 rock bands with 2 studio albums that sold more than 10 million copies in the US, and is also tied for the most multi-platinum albums by an American band. Additionally, Van Halen has charted 13 number one hits on Billboard's mainstream rock chart. So they started by playing at backyard parties and on flatbed truck at Hamilton Park. In one early gig in 1974, Van Halen played a gig at the Christmas Family Festival at the Greek Theater in San Pedro, California. By the spring of 1975, they were the regular Tuesday night band at Myron's Ballroom. Van Halen subsequently played in clubs in Pasadena and Hollywood to growing audiences, increasing their popularity through self-promotion. Before each gig, they passed out flyers at local high schools, and this sort of self-promotion soon built them a major following. So upon its release, the album Van Halen reached number 19 on the Billboard Pop Music Charts, one of rock's most commercially successful debuts. It was highly regarded as both a heavy metal and a hard rock album. The album included songs now regarded as Van Halen classics, such as Runnin' with the Devil and guitar solo Eruption, which showcased Eddie's use of a technique known as finger tapping. The band toured for nearly a year, opening for Black Sabbath and establishing a reputation for their performances. The band's chemistry was based on Eddie Van Halen's guitar technique and David Lee Roth's frontman skills. The band returned to the studio in late 1978 to record Van Halen 2, and this record yielded the band's first hit single, which was Dance the Night Away. In 1984, they released the album titled 1984, and this was a commercial success, going 5 times platinum after a year of release. And they recorded it at Eddie's newly built 5150 Studios, and the lead single, titled Jump, featured a synthesizer hook and lyrics inspired by the news coverage of a suicidal jumper. It became the band's first and only number one pop hit, with Roth garnering them a Grammy nomination. So during the recordings of songs for the film Twister, escalating tension between Hager and the Van Halen brothers kind of boiled over, and Hager departed on Father's Day of 1996. The band had recorded Humans Being, a song for which Eddie, unhappy with Hager's lyrics, retitled the song and rewrote the melody. This actually upset Hager, and when they were to record a second song for the soundtrack, Hager was in Hawaii for the birth of his child. So with Hager back in Hawaii, and against the idea of doing the project, but having another song left to contribute, the Van Halen brothers actually alone recorded the instrumental Respect the Wind. The performance, which featured Eddie playing guitar and Alex playing keyboards, was nominated for the Best Rock Instrumental Performance at the 39th Annual Grammy Awards. So, while they did actually go on to the present day, recent news on October 6th of this year, 2020, Wolfgang announced on his Twitter account that Eddie Van Halen had passed away from cancer, putting the future of the band in further uncertainty. So, rest in peace to a legendary guitarist who will be missed by so many. And with that, I will leave you guys on another quick break, where after we will go over the most influential rock band in the history of rock. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio. Welcome back, rockers. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio. So after going over a long list of hard rock bands, I want to end this segment with the legendary Led Zeppelin. So Led Zeppelin was an English rock band formed in London of 1968. The group consisted of vocalist Robert Plant, guitarist Jimmy Page, bassist and keyboardist John Paul Jones, and drummer John Bonham. The band has been credited with majority of impacting the nature of the music industry, particularly in the development of the album-oriented rock and stadium rock. Many critics consider Led Zeppelin one of the most successful, innovative, and influential rock groups in history. After changing their name from the New Yardbirds, as I mentioned in previous shows, Led Zeppelin signed a deal with Atlantic Records that afforded them the considerable artistic freedom. Led Zeppelin's music was rooted in the blues. The influence of American blues artists such as Muddy Waters and Skip James was particularly apparent on their first two albums, as was the distinct country blues style of Howlin' Wolf. Tracks were structured around the 12-bar blues on every studio album except for one, and the blues directly and indirectly influenced other songs both musically and lyrically. Early lyrics drew on the band's blues and folk roots, often mixing lyrical fragments from different songs. Many of the band's songs dealt with themes of romance, unrequited love, and sexual conquest. Some of their lyrics, especially those derived from the blues, have been interpreted as misogynistic. Led Zeppelin's sound was also marked by speed and power, unusual rhythmic patterns, contrasting terse dynamics, singer Robert Plant's wailing vocals, and guitarist Jimmy Page's heavily distorted crunch. These elements mean that they were often cited as one of the originators of hard rock. So their debut album, titled Led Zeppelin, was released in the US during the tour in January of 1969, and it peaked at number 10 on the Billboard chart. It was released in the UK, where it peaked at number 6, and according to Steve Irwine, the album's memorable guitar riffs, lumbering rhythms, psychedelic blues, groovy, bluesy shuffles, and hints of English folk music made it a significant turning point in the evolution of hard rock and heavy metal. In 1969, an edited version of the song titled Whole Lotta Love, a track from their second album, was released as a single in the US, It reached number 4 on the Billboard chart in 1970, selling over 1 million copies and helping to cement the band's popularity. The group also increasingly shunned television appearances, citing their preference that their fans hear and see them in live concerts instead. Despite all this, during the 1970s, Led Zeppelin reached new heights of commercial and critical success that made them one of the most influential groups of the era, kind of eclipsing their earlier achievements. The band's image also changed as the members began to wear more elaborate, flamboyant clothing, with Page taking the lead on the flamboyant appearance by wearing a glittering moon and stars outfit. Led Zeppelin changed their show by using things such as lasers, professional light shows, and mirror balls. They also began traveling in a private jet airliner, a Boeing 720, which was nicknamed the Starship. They actually rented out entire sections of hotels just for this. So Led Zeppelin's next album, titled Houses of the Holy, was released in March of 1973. It featured further experimentation by the band, who expanded their use of synthesizers and mellotron orchestration. The orange album cover, designed by the London-based design group Hypnosis, depicts images of nude children climbing the Giant's Causeway in Northern Ireland. Although the children are not shown from the front, the cover was still controversial at the time of the album's release. This album created a subsequent concert tour of North America in 1973, broke records for attendance as they consistently filled large auditoriums and stadiums. At the Tampa Stadium in Florida, they played to 56,800 fans, while breaking the record set by the Beatles' 1965 Shea Stadium concert and grossing over $309,000. A North American tour, the band's first since 1977, was scheduled to commence in October of 1980, but in September, Bonham was picked up by Led Zeppelin's assistant Rex King to attend rehearsals at Bray Studios. During the journey, Bonham was asked to stop for breakfast, where he downed a ton of alcohol with a ham roll. After taking a bite of the ham roll, he said to his assistant, "Breakfast." He continued to drink heavily, arriving at the studio. After midnight, Bonham had fallen asleep and was taken to bed and placed on his side. At 1:45 p.m. the next day, Led Zeppelin's new tour manager and John Paul Jones found Bonham dead, and the cause of death was asphyxiation from vomit, and the finding was an accidental death. So, overall, as I mentioned, Led Zeppelin has been credited with a major impact on the nature of the music business, particularly in the development of album-oriented rock and stadium rock. Led Zeppelin kind of laid the foundation for the big hair of the 1980s. Glam metal bands such as Motley Crue and Skid Row kind of took part of this. Other musicians have also adapted elements from Led Zeppelin's attitude to clothes, jewelry, and hair, such as the hipster flares and tight band t-shirts of Kings of Leon, shaggy hair, clinky t-shirts, and bluesman hair of Jack White of the White Stripes. Led Zeppelin was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1995 and the UK Music Hall of Fame in 2006. And this is where I will conclude today's show. Thank you so much for listening, rockers, and I hope you will join me next time. My name is DJ Blue, and this is The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio.